First case for argument, United States versus Behena. Ms. Ambrosio.
Good morning, Your Honors. I submitted in our supplemental brief filed this morning in light of the recent Supreme Court decision of Blakely v. Washington. We submit that the application of the guidelines in Mr. Behena's case was unconstitutional because Mr. Behena's own admissions did not support the sentence imposed by the district court in that he was held responsible for...
I don't see how this can help you, counsel, because if we say the guidelines are unconstitutional, we throw them out, and then you're just left with the statutory maximum, which is the old pre-guidelines rule that a district court can impose any sentence it jolly well pleases less than the statutory maximum. So how is your client better off?
Your Honor, Mr. Behena's position in this case is a very limited application of the Blakely v. Washington decision. In light of his own admissions and in consideration of the sentence that the judge imposed, which was based on a finding of 35 kilograms, considering the plea...
No, you might want to address my question. How is your client better off? If we say the guidelines are unconstitutional, how is your client better off?
Thank you. We asked that Mr. Behena be sentenced and that he would be better off in a sentencing range of 57
no,
to 71.
No, if the guidelines are unconstitutional, there are no sentencing ranges. Right? There's just the old system, which was the district judge can impose any sentence he or she pleases less than the statutory maximum.
And the statutory maximum in...
Your client was not aggrieved by that standard.
Well, the statutory maximum in this case, if he was sentenced based on 35 kilograms, would be life.
The statutory maximum is given in the statute, not in the guidelines. Right?
I believe you're speaking to 841?
Yeah.
Subsection B.
Right. And what did the jury find?
Well, this is a plea.
Sorry. What was the amount conceded in the plea?
The amount in the plea was based on 35 kilograms of cocaine.
All right. So he concedes 35 kilos?
We submit that he did not. In the plea colloquy, Your Honor, he denied having knowledge of cocaine.
Right. Ever since Apprendi, we have been requiring pleas and district judges to make findings on the statutory thresholds, 500 grams, 5 kilos, and so on for the higher statutory maximum. This plea must have conformed to that. What happened?
It was drafted so as to be consistent with his statements, which were, I was told that it was marijuana. It was drafted so as to say co-schemer A paid Mr. Behena $300 to drive a car that contained 35 kilograms of cocaine. Later on in the plea agreement, there was a paragraph that said Mr. Behena knew narcotics were in the trunk. Mr. Behena acknowledged in the plea colloquy that the drugs he thought were in the car was marijuana. 35 keys of marijuana would allow the court to sentence him in the range of 5 to 10 years, according to statute. It's a difference of almost 200 months. So
I haven't seen anything so far which Blakely bears on this. The argument you're now making sounds like an argument under the original Apprendi case, which, of course, you weren't making on appeal.
No. In terms of preservation of an argument under Apprendi, we believe that was made when he called into question the sentencing on relevant conduct. And in light of this court's interpretation of Apprendi before Blakely v. Washington, the assumption is that his attorney advised not to make that argument in using those particular terms. But the plea agreement does not say that Mr. Behena pleads and had the intent and knowledge of 35 kilograms of cocaine. It said he knew there were narcotics in the car. And we submit that Blakely v. Washington applies because the holding in that case says that a defendant should be held accountable in his sentence, or a district court should sentence the defendant either based on the jury's findings or based on the defendant's own admissions. The defendant's admissions in the plea agreement, and also, more strongly, his specific statements in the plea colloquy, which should govern general statements within the plea agreement, acknowledge that he did not know that there was cocaine in the car. And the difference between 35 kilograms of cocaine and 35 kilograms of marijuana is great. It's the difference between a sentence at the max of 10 years to a sentence at the maximum of a life sentence, which is what he was sentenced at.
Mm-hmm.
And the other arguments Mr. Behena presented in his opening brief and reply brief were based on the judge's disregard, district court judge's disregard for her discretion to grant a downward departure request. And Mr. Behena presented four bases for a downward departure. One of them, of course, the disparity between his belief and actual type and quantity of drugs found in his possession, which also goes to his argument according to Blakely v. Washington. The second basis, when unreasonableness of attributing an entire drug amount to Behena, the failure to give him a downward departure based on his minimal...
Just to return for a moment to this Blakely issue, the government says that you've admitted all the facts bearing on Behena's sentence. It's just a question of what the sentence should be based on those facts. Is that correct?
That's not what Mr. Behena's position is. His position is that he pledged to knowledge of narcotics in the trunk, not to knowledge of 35 kilograms of cocaine. He also submits, as I said, that when he was asked by the district court judge if he agreed to this statement in the statement of facts as presented by the government in the plea agreement, his response to the district court judge, and it's attached to our brief, was, "They told me it was marijuana."
Yeah, but let me repeat my question.
Yeah.
This sounds like an original Apprendi argument. Sounds like an argument that this defendant can't be sentenced above 1 year, which is the fallback for marijuana crimes. It has nothing to do with Blakely. It doesn't have to do with the constitutionality of the guidelines. It has to do with what is the maximum exposure. But no such argument was made in the district court or here. And how is it preserved? Your argument seems to have nothing whatever to do with Blakely.
Your Honor, first, we did not intend our argument to be that the federal sentencing guidelines are unconstitutional. The position is that a very narrow application of that be used to find that Mr. Behena be sentenced using the guidelines according to his own...
But your argument is not a guidelines argument. You're making an argument about what is the statutory maximum sentence. And that was an argument available before Blakely. I don't see how it was preserved.
Because Mr. Behena argued in his sentencing memorandum and at the sentencing hearing about the disparity between his belief, actual type, and quantity of drugs, we propose that the argument was preserved.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ambrosio. Mr. Reichick?
The court. It is incorrect to say that the defendant did not concede the facts on which his sentence was based. In the district court, the parties negotiated a written plea agreement. That written plea agreement set forth the charge, possession with intent to distribute in excess of 5 kilograms of cocaine, the factual basis for the charge, the maximum penalty, the guidelines calculations, the conclusion that based upon the defendant's offense and his criminal history, he was a career offender with an offense level of 37 and a criminal history category of 6. The defendant and his attorney signed the plea agreement and the parties presented it to the district court. At the change of plea hearing, the district court went over all of those points with the defendant and obtained from the defendant an acknowledgement of his understanding of each of those points. That portion of the plea hearing transcript is not attached to the defendant's supplemental brief, but I urge you to review that because the district court went over all of these points with the defendant.
And the defendant agreed it was cocaine?
This is what happened. After the government recited the factual basis for the plea, which indicated that the defendant was hired to drive this SUV that was packed with cocaine, the district court asked the defendant, "Have you heard the statement of the assistant United States attorney?" The defendant responds, "Yes." The court says, "Is it true?" The defendant responds, "The only thing is that they told me to drive the car. They told me it had marijuana and not cocaine." Then there is a discussion as to the legal implication of that. And the court later turns to the defendant and says, "All right, I need to know whether or not you wish to plead guilty at this point or whether you want to plead not guilty." The defendant asks to speak to his attorney. The court allows him to do so. And the defendant then says, "Okay, yes, I plead guilty." He could have gone to trial at that point if he contested the type of drugs or the quantity of drugs, but he decided to plead guilty, knowing that the charge against him was possession with intent to distribute cocaine. And by the way, he never denied that he thought it was cocaine. He was being paid $300 to drive about 4 miles. That's an awful lot of money if you think you're driving a load of marijuana.
Well, given the consequences, it wasn't an awful lot of money.
No, that is correct. But in the defendant's mind, it should have triggered a notion, why are they paying me so much money to drive marijuana for 4 miles, $75 a mile? An awful lot of money. And by the way, he has prior convictions for distribution of marijuana, so he knows the value of marijuana. So here is a case where the defendant doesn't deny that he knew it. He just says, "That's what they told me." He never says, "I thought it was marijuana." In fact, when he talked to the probation officer, he said, "I didn't know whether it was marijuana or cocaine." So there's no dispute here about the nature of the drugs, and the defendant never really denied the nature of the drugs. After receiving that "I plead guilty" statement from the defendant, what was the district court to do? Convene a jury to determine whether or not the defendant really meant it? I mean, it seems to be what the defendant expected the district court to do in order to satisfy Blakely. That's ridiculous.
In your supplemental brief about Blakely, you say that the Supreme Court says that, you know, we're not supposed to overrule Supreme Court decisions. But what Supreme Court decision do you think we would be overruling if we held that the guidelines were unconstitutional?
I believe that in Mistretta the Supreme Court said that the guidelines were constitutional.
But that was about delegation, wasn't it? It
has nothing to do with the Sixth Amendment.
Well, however, in this court's past ruling...
Yes, I know, of course, about this court, but that's not the issue, right? The Supreme Court decides a case which throws our previous decisions into doubt. We're obviously not bound by those previous decisions. I mean, you assert that we would have to overrule a Supreme Court decision in order to apply Blakely to the guidelines. My question is, do you have any other Supreme Court decision besides Mistretta?
Not right now, Your Honor, but I would be more than happy to submit additional authority.
Well, what do you think is the significance of Edwards?
I'm sorry?
Edwards. What do you think is the significance of Edwards? Your supplemental brief cites Edwards.
You don't want to discuss that's all right. This is all brewed up so quickly. Pardon? You were listening to
I'm looking at Booker.
Right.
The Department of Justice, in any event, is aware of Edwards.
Undoubtedly, Your Honor. The defendant did waive any argument on this issue by not addressing it in his initial brief or his reply brief in on this appeal, and he easily could have done that. In fact, U.S. versus Filomeno, which the defendant himself cites in his supplemental brief, says as much.
Of course, the complication here is people, he would have pleaded guilty on the assumption that these guidelines were valid.
Well, that is correct, but if he felt, and he, according to the defendant, he did believe that based upon his perception of what he was possessing with intent to distribute, the guidelines calculation was excessive, then he could have made an Apprendi argument. So it's and according to the defendant, he did raise it below, and he easily could have raised it before this court. So,
when was the defendant's plea in relation to the grant of certiorari in Blakely?
The
was
defendant,
it before or after certiorari was granted?
I believe it was before. The defendant pled guilty on February 12th of 2003. So I believe that was before certiorari was granted in the Blakely decision. If the court has any additional questions for me, I will be more than happy to answer them. If not, then I will simply ask that the court affirm the conviction and sentence below.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Roshick. Ms. Ambrosio, how much time do you have? A minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, with respect to what Mr. Behena understood at the time that he entered into his plea agreement, we do submit that he may have had a different decision if he had understood that he would be sentenced based on his own admissions rather than...
Let me answer this with regard to Behena, but suppose there never had been any sentencing guidelines. How would this case have come out differently in the district court, do you think, if at all?
Well, I don't believe he would have received, without being able to cite to any authority right now, I don't believe that he would have been sentenced at the level that he was sentenced. He was paid $300 to drive a car a few blocks, and he was sentenced for responsibility that was involved in a conspiracy under which he was not charged, which resulted in a sentence of life. I believe that there wouldn't have been the sentencing guidelines, there wouldn't have been the attribution of relevant conduct, these additional drug amounts.
He received the statutory maximum? Is that
right? Yes, he did.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Ambrosio. And you were